Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and let's look at the election dynamics through the lens of Arlie Hochschild, one of our most influential living sociologists. She has written books including The Second Shift, about women who work outside the home and then inside it, also The Managed Heart and The Outsourced Self. Her new book is Strangers in Their Own Land, Anger and Mourning on the American Right. Arlie, good to have you again. Welcome back to WNYC.
Oh, Brian, it's great to be here.
Your book is not about Trump supporters per se, but in a way it might as well be. What did you set out to do?
Right. I set out to look at the huge political divide 5 years ago and get out of my political bubble in Berkeley, California, and find an equal and opposite political bubble where the right had grown the fastest. That would be among white people. That would be in the South. I want the super South. That would be Louisiana. And I started there.
And I think the heart of your book is what you call the deep story that people have in this country and the competing deep stories that we have in an increasingly polarized time. Where would you begin with the deep story, the definition of that, and the one you're trying to tell?
Right. To get to it, first, I should say, I had to take off my own alarm system, my political alarm system, and say, hey, I'm here not to tell you what I think. I'm here to learn what I don't know about how your worldview makes sense to you. And I met some amazing people who felt who were very interested in helping me understand them. They didn't just put up a barrier. They felt very forgotten and misunderstood as racist. What I found is that they knew about what I call the red state paradox, that the poorer states that take the most federal money and hate the state, or conservatively, you know, want to downsize the state. That's the paradox I went in looking for. They knew that was there, but that wasn't the big deal for them. The big deal for them was what I came to call the deep story. And what a deep story is, you take the facts out, you take the moral judgments out. It's life as it feels. And what they felt, you imagine a line of people like a pilgrimage up a hill at the top of which is the American dream. And people have been waiting in that line with a sense of deserving for a very long time. And then they see other people cutting in line. Anybody can relate to that.
Is that the undocumented immigrants?
It is. Blacks on affirmative action. It's women, career-oriented women, interested in what formerly male jobs. It's refugees. It's even public sector workers.
It's even President Obama himself, according to your book.
Exactly. They see him waving to the line cutters and saying, hey, I'm with you. I'm going to help you. And then back in line, push back further in line, as it's experienced in the deep story by the right, are people who feel forgotten. And, oh, he's not sponsoring us. And so then the whole federal government seems like a giant marginalization machine to them.
And a betrayal.
Yeah. And a betrayal. That's right. So they're looking for another government, another way out. They feel like strangers in their own land.
And hence, Strangers in Their Own Land, the title of the book, with the subtitle Anger and Mourning on the American Right. And listeners, if you want to call in for Arlie Hochschild, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Given this reporting, this study, what was your reaction to Hillary Clinton's framing of many Trump supporters as a basket of deplorables? And many others, that's the part that gets left out a lot, many others as not,
right.
And maybe they're the people you're describing.
That's right. And It's very sad. She's pushing away the very people she needs to be calling forward, who are waiting and for whom the Democratic Party doesn't seem like an answer. There's a big challenge there that could go a very different way. I was just in Louisiana hosting a dinner for all the people that are in the book, and a woman came up to me. Who's a whole chapter, and she had a red jacket on. She pulled open her red jacket, and she had a T-shirt that said, "Adorable Deplorables." And that's kind of what the Tea Party right is doing with it. And these shirts are being sold on a bus that's going around the states for Republican women. It's called Rosie, selling Adorable Deplorables things. So they have a quick comeback to it. They feel dismissed. And that's a refusal to climb this empathy wall that I think we've got to do to get to talking. You know, it's not something simple. It takes a little time, but it's the next step forward. It's preliminary to the kinds of talks we need to pull this country together.
It also suggests, the way you describe it with the Adorable Deplorables T-shirt, which I hadn't heard about before, that and we've had callers like that, like this, that those Trump supporters who Clinton was trying to break off with that comment by saying, "I feel the pain," to use her husband's term, of you who are, you know, earnestly trying to live your life and in these positions and you wind up supporting Donald Trump. She's trying to split them off from other people who are more, you know, explicitly racist.
That's right.
Or xenophobic or sexist.
That's right.
And they're not having it.
That's right. Because they feel insulted by that term. They feel personally referred to. Oh, yeah, I'm the deplorable she's talking about.
Why do they think they're the deplorable rather than they're in the other basket?
Because going back to the deep story, another thing that happens as the line cutters are getting closer to the American dream than you are, as you perceive it, there's someone ahead of the line that turns around and says, "Oh, you ignorant Southern redneck." And I had a number of people tell me, "Look, you can't say the N-word, but lots of people on your side and the liberals are saying the R-word. And they feel that's included in this word deplorable, that you happen to be a poor and white. And we need to work on that."
Let's take a phone call. Rita in Somerset. You're on WNYC with Arlie Hochschild. Hi, Rita.
Hi, Ryan. I just wanted to make a comment. You know, I feel sorry for the people who are supporting Trump, the people who feel that he is their answer, because they should also look at Trump's track record. I know that they feel they've not been helped by current governments, but they should also look at what he's been trying to do the last so many years. What is his career? Basically, he's exploited people. He sued a lot of people. He's never paid his workers properly, his people who is contracted properly. He has enriched himself at poor people's expense. And to think that such a person would have any answers to their problem, I think is a little, you know, they are being slightly deluded. And I feel in this instance, the media has not really brought out the extent of his, you know, all the his lawsuits, the fact that, you know, he has kind of, you know, exploited people all along his life. So that's something which I think people should be aware of.
Rita, thank you very much.
Yes, Rita, you're right. In the people I talk to, if you were to say that to them, they would hear you and say, "Yes, I know, I'm reading the papers too, but I don't think Trump means badly, and there's nobody else I see that hears me."
I think this is going to be a major, if not text, subtext of the debate tonight, Clinton trying to make that connection with more people than she has so far. And it'll be very interesting to see if and how she tries to do it, to say to people, "Wait, you feel like you're disenfranchised, white working class Americans," however she characterizes that population or those populations. But Donald Trump has had a whole career of ripping off little guy workers who work for him in other countries, of ripping off his creditors, of ripping off his customers, while I, Hillary Clinton, shall say, you know, have been working to raise up working class and poor families.
Of every color,
she may put it. But I guess communicating that is very, very tricky because it's so easy for them to feel like they're being dismissed in the ways you've been describing.
Mm-hmm, because they have been dismissed in the past, they feel. You know, it's interesting. I talked to a Trump guy just yesterday who was had lost his house to a drilling accident. It's described in the book. And a drilling accident by a company, but he's blaming the government, and he's pro-Trump. And a whole community that he lived in has been evacuated because of this accident that could have been avoided with strict environmental regulation. Okay, he's voting for Trump, who says, I'm going to abolish the Environmental Protection Agency. How, I asked him, could you? How does this fit? How does this make sense to you? He said, Trump doesn't really mean it. He's just saying that to get votes.
Well, there's that. But also, I read the section of the book where you say that the word environment or environmental doesn't mean the same thing to the folks you're writing about than it might mean to a lot of political liberals.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
What does it signify?
And he says he now has been converted to the idea of the environment. He loves the environment. He's a big fisherman hunter, loves the environment. But he says, well, you can call me a conservationist, avoiding the word, but not the idea. You know, I found a lot of crossover issues. If we could only cross that empathy wall. This is the same man who said, let's get money out of politics. I said, well, you've got some agreement there. You know, let's clean up the environment. Well, you've got agreement there. A lot of other issues, too.
Celeste in Jersey City. You're on WNYC with Arlie Hochschild, author of Strangers in Their Own Land, Anger and Mourning on the American Right. Hi, Celeste.
Hi, how are you? I like your show.
Thank you.
I love your show, actually. I just wanted to say that I come from a Rust Belt state, and I'm one of the more liberal members of my family. In fact, I'm actually very liberal. But I have been fighting this battle for years for getting people in my family, and just even when I hear it casually said, do not use the term redneck, because it is a dehumanizing and degrading term. I grew up with a lot of people who didn't have college educations or who worked in factories when there were factories or who worked in service jobs, and they have just the same concerns as everybody else. There's no reason to put them down because they didn't go on for a higher form of education,
right.
and they take it very personally.
And that's so right. Does that land them in the lap of Donald Trump politically?
You know, I think it does, because they sort of feel like they've been forgotten. They're immediately written off as being racist, and they may or may not be. Not everybody is the same.
That's exactly right. They
all fit. You can't throw them all in the same basket.
That's right.
But on the other hand, there's a lot of things. For instance, my own brother is a hunter, and he's really ecologically aware because he eats the venison that he kills.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, the deer that he enjoys hunting, and he eats that, and he's really worried about fracking.
Yes.
In our home state.
Wow. Wow.
So, you know, but, right. I find it frustrating because, you know, people think that if you defend the term redneck, that you're immediately, they immediately put you in a basket. It may not be the basket you deserve to be in.
And there's that word again, a basket. Arlie, you can't stay the rest of the hour, right? I would extend you, but it sounds like you have to go to another appointment, right?
I do, unfortunately.
All right. So, listeners, if you want to continue with Arlie Hochschild, you can do so in person later today. She's got an event, which is a book reading at 7 o'clock at Book Culture, 81st and Columbus.
Yes, love
Manhattan.
To see you.
There are still bookstores in Manhattan. Book Culture on 81st and Columbus, a reading at 7 o'clock tonight from Strangers in Their Own Land, Anger and Mourning on the American Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.